Yeah, another session from the Dutch Institute for Vulnerability Disclosure. You already had a session on FortiGate, on CVEs, fingerprinting, scanning, notifying. We also filed a zero-day today on the badge. And a third line of research we do is look for open sources, for example, open GitHub, find credentials, and warn people that their data is leaked. This is actually the easiest form of hacking, but it's also the most effective one, because with one credential, well, you can cause a power outage, for example, and that's how Jelle Ersen, our researcher, entered DIVD. He found on a GitHub repository the credentials of SolarMan, entering a million solar converters, and we also hit the news with Jelle's finding. And he does this very often. As the managing director, sometimes I get emails from companies. They go, thank you very much, Jelle saved us. Here's 500 euros. Yeah, put it on our account. And so one of them actually sent us 1,000 euro and asked Jelle, what should we do with it? He said, well, buy challenge coins. So we got 1,000 euros of challenge coins, thanks to Jelle. So today he will explain his method on, finding the low-hanging fruit. Welcome, Jelle Ersen.
Thank you. I can basically skip my introductory slide where I tell you what's my name. I'm Jelle. I'm actually not a hacker, I think. I'm a programmer. I've been a programmer all my working life. So I work with code really good. I do DevOps. I work at a small company, Samson IT in Delft. And apparently I'm good at finding passwords and leaking data. I've done hundreds of vulnerability disclosures over the past couple of years, so many that I can't find the details in my mind about which one was which. It all becomes a blur. Back in 22, I really needed the help of DIVD to disclose the SolarMan issue, so they onboarded me. We were already kind of rubbing against each other on social medias and stuff. But I was like, I need help because China. This made a lot of people very nervous. Also, if I try to reach out to you, you're probably in trouble because I don't notify for an XSS even lower hanging fruit exploit. But when I try to call you, I probably found the password and I'm probably already inside your network with credentials you gave me. So how did I get here at Hacker Hotel in 2024? I've thought and looked back over the years, and actually back in 2000 was my first responsible disclosure. There was this company that introduced a free SMS service where you could append, you got appended an ad at the end of your SMS. I was able to figure out you could override that, you could delete the cookie, you had an infinite SMS glitch. This got costly very quickly, almost got out of hand. 2014, I found a uTorrent remote execution that you could connect to via JavaScript to somebody's uTorrent, then download a torrent, then change the executable player via the same JavaScript and execute the contents of that torrent. Fun. And in 2020, somebody on Twitter said, hey, do you know how many people upload their passwords to GitHub? And I was like, come on, this can't be. And I started checking. And here we are today. I call myself the lamest hacker you know, because I don't think this is hacking. I don't have fancy pen test tools installed. I'm a programmer. Code works in basically the same way everywhere. There's a model view controller, some services, some web services. There's a config file. That's stuff I understand, and that's what other people also understand, but maybe sometimes not perfectly. I don't have any certifications. I'm self-taught, self-trained, but yeah, here I am still today, so basically I'm a hacker. How do I work? I find the secrets developers publish to public sources. And this can be very versatile. This can be your source code, your .dot files, your public repositories that your company is willingly publishing. That could have something special. But usually it's a developer account. I use several dorks, Greyhound Warfare, and Postman. I'll take you through those in a minute. And then the most important thing I think, or I discovered, is I go through these results by hand. You can script a whole lot of stuff, and I know that the whole world is scripting this stuff, and the whole world is alerting for this stuff, but why am I finding so much? People are missing a vast amount of data. When you do it, when you do this, it's quite important to have some strong ethics, because you can make people really mad really quickly. We had some talks about the FED members that also experienced that recently. So I keep myself strictly to the IVD code of ethics, with, of course, the kind of plot twist where if I find an authentication token, I need to know if it works. So I will have to log in with that authentication token. And if that works, I know that I'm going to notify you. If that doesn't work, I don't need to send an email, because non-working credentials is useless to notify. I do take into account, when I am testing APIs, that I execute the GET requests, not the POST, PUT, PATCH. I don't upload data. I'm not taking your whole database if I find access to your system. I'm taking a sample, or maybe I show you the database schema of your own system. I try to fetch an authentication token. JWT tokens are very popular, used everywhere. And there are not a really lot of people that exactly understand how it works underwater and what you can stuff inside of it and then what you can take out via public methods. And while doing that, I keep screenshotting everything and making sure that that's my log. I paste that directly into my email. And then I have to think about what could somebody with evil intentions do with this? The reporting part is why I don't work in cybersecurity for my day job, because I like writing code and being productive. And sorry for all IT guys, but there's way too much writing. So my disclosure email, my initial disclosure email, is my report that contains everything. I have a bunch of canned responses based on the category. I select that one, I fill in the details. And I add as many screenshots and interesting points so that somebody can see right away, oh, this is serious. Links to the sensitive data is important to include in that email right away, but add a screenshot too. Because I've had it happen that in the time that I sent my email and the time that I finally got a response, the data was magically gone. There was no proof of it ever having been existed, and yet I sent my email and I forgot the screenshot. Back then, always do that. And of course, if you use a screen snipping tool, you can censor sensitive data right away. If you want to prove to somebody that they are leaking their whole address book, you don't have to include the names and the addresses in the email address. You can just say at domain, you just leave that readable. The rest you can censor out, stripe it away. You're not responsible then for that data being sent out through the multiple email servers. I use some dorks. These are GitHub searches or general search terms. When I see a company in the news, maybe I type the news their company name into the GitHub search, or I read an article somewhere, or I drive by in the car when I'm in the passenger seat. Oh, let's try that company name. I've never investigated them. So then I'm trying to do a broad scan of very quick perspective. If somebody searches for password for this company, do they get any hits? Way too often you do. You can find the SMTP addresses. These are the simple ones, but they often have a lot of impact because usually there's an Office 365 account or a Gmail account or whatever behind it that's been configured for machine-to-machine communication, but usually not OAuth. An SMTP account can also log in as a Windows user, normally. We'll get to that in a bit. FTP passwords, account keys are fun. If you see the second line, account key equals not Contoso and not example and not DevStore account one. This finds Azure Blob Storage container accounts. This is basically a cloud drive that you can use inside your company. It's tied to your Azure environment, and you can create little buckets under that. It's Microsoft's alternative to Azure Storage Explorer, to AWS buckets. But the credential string is often just pasted into the code. And with that, you can do fun stuff like create new buckets for them, or read the listings, or see what files have been deleted, just by using the normal software that's used to manage that. Company name and git add also finds you interesting stuff. For instance, if you do that on a GitHub search, you find people's .dot file, where they have checked in their .dot git repositories with a config file, which may lead you to another git repository that's on an internal server. That's how I got into Dutch Tax Authority. One of the tools, oh, I think I had them all. No, I don't. Like I was saying, dig deeper, find the config files, find the related repositories, find domain names that that asset that you're currently investigating may be using. So I'll type in the main domain name into DNS dumpster. I'll try to see, do they have a GitLab running, a Jira. It will just give me a small tree of what public DNS records they have. And you could combine that with the other information that you find on GitHub, because then you see also private information and whole private IP ranges, firewall rules. Why does this stuff have to be public? Automation stuff for Jira. There's a ticketing system connected to the DevOps system or to the developer system, so that when somebody pushes code or updates a ticket, those can talk to each other. Super handy. Don't publish the credentials. And of course, the classic one, check the commit history. It happened more than often that I've told somebody, you published your password there, and they come back to me, I fixed it. Yeah, I see that. This was the commit where you fixed it, but this is not the way we're going to fix this, because you published this already. So if you want to fix this, please just delete the repository, or do a rebase if you know what you're doing, but please just delete the repository. The 404 page of GitHub is my favorite page to see. But thankfully, GitHub kind of solved this problem themselves, because the new search engine that they published on GitHub sucks, from my perspective. Historical data is gone. Pages are being indexed the moment that you try to search for a specific file in a specific repository. And I know that there are parties out there who have been collecting all the commit data for the past couple of years into one large database. They might have a database that does contain all this and allows you to search through it. There's also a couple of Google dorks where you can find stuff, but this is such a simple topic that's been treated so often that I'm just going to skip over it. Try to find config parameter files, see if they are being parsed. If they are not being parsed, you can see the source code right from the web server, because PHP is not configured properly or whatever is behind there. Config files might just be presented to you as plain text. They should be outside of the web root. They should not even be visible to the web. One of my recent favorite things to look for is Postman Suites. Postman is a tool used by developers to create APIs to make computers talk to computers and to test how they work. It has so many options. It's like the outlook of web applications. There's dialogues behind switches and drop downs, and then you can toggle this and open that. That makes it really powerful. It's a very popular tool. But new workspaces that people with a new account create are public by default. In recent versions, they've added some minor text alerts that say, hey, you're storing sensitive data here. Make sure that you use environments and use our technology. But that's not how people work, apparently. And if you want to work with your developer team and you have a small company like maybe five or six, then you'll have to pay up to make those developers use the same data. People are cheap, so they will have an extra developer that just joined the team, and he will clone this stuff and make a copy of himself on his new public Postman account, so at least he can work in setup. It's always the same story. Fun dorks on Postman is search for the environments, production, staging, UAT, IDP endpoints, pre-production, authentication, JWT. But again, you're working with an indexer, and maybe it's not completely clear what the indexer is presenting you. If I search for password, that means that within Postman, somebody has had to enter the text password as a description for a specific variable. Usually it doesn't work that way. It's called SMTP user or something descriptive. So varying with that is really helpful. And if you can find environments, that's even more helpful. But it's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. That's really true. And also one thing to keep into account, leaking everything can be a completely valid scenario. I have a slide further on from Cisco. Cisco has entire DevNet collections. Those are some of the largest Postman suites with many different credentials in there that are completely valid because they're used for training. They're referred on the public internet, and you can waste a lot of time researching all of it and then coming up with the idea, oh, hey, they actually intended this to be public, and this is infrastructure that's killed every day, then rebuilt so that this stuff works. Also, Google itself indexes Postman because Postman publishes this weird XML file that lists all the public repositories, but you're not allowed to scrape them or index them, whatever. This also suffers from the same problem that you can't just search for password and the same indexable, queryable terms. If you are creative with that, you never know what you're going to get. Postman has this built-in search engine too. So you see there, if I search for production auth, how that works. You see some of the variables are being interpolated. Some have production in the domain name that you're looking for, which could also be weird. There's categories and filters that you can still apply to this. But there's a lot of data. Inside Postman, there are a couple of different interesting spots where you can find interesting data, and I've tried to circle them. I can totally understand that for people new to Postman, they're like, what the hell is this? We have on the left, we have the collections, environments, and history tabs. Under the environments tab, there can be a whole tree of different staging, production, test, local, development, collections with variables inside them. Then for the main category of a collection item, you can define variables in the parameters. And you can go deeper and you can define parameters and override previous parameters at the top and at the bottom. You can set custom authorization username and password per request if you need it. You can run JavaScript before each request and perform a web request to fetch external data to fetch that into your... So many options. You saw just previously on the search that there was an interpolation for an environment variable. This is how that looks. So you switch to the environment tab. You see that here's one staging environment and define URL, username, password. So these values are normally not indexed, but the names are. And they made a point of making it very clear that this could be sensitive data. This is all that they do. And here under the authentication top level, you can see another variable section where also specific variables can be stored and shared and again interpolated with the environments. You can see how many things you need to take into account to make no mistakes. During a request, so I'm going to execute a request to auth URL on this IDP environment, and it's going to post these variables. What I used to do within Postman, because that's the normal workflow, is you clone the Postman suite, then you also have to separately clone each of the variables that you want to have there on the top right. So in your own Postman account, you now have 200 different sections, which is an absolute mess because you can't find them, it gets slow. But on the right there, there's this code thingy, which is awesome because it turns the current request into a curl request with a copy button behind it. As soon as I discovered that, I totally stopped cloning repositories. It's just give me the request, copy to curl. I'll change it myself if I need to. Paste it into terminal and execute. I'll usually try to find an authentication token function, because if you get no authentication token on an endpoint, it's a waste of time. Move on. I will not be pen testing. I am specifically limiting myself to the leaking credentials. So if there's no credentials leaking, I will not be deep diving into your API and trying to find that XSS exploit by registering an account here. No, there's too much of this. I will just move on to the next target. And if you perform a valid authentication token, then you'll receive a JWT response, which is a bit of JSON that you can extract and very easily visualize. So you just copy this whole part of the access token, and then you open a new tab to jwt.io, and you paste that content there, and it will tell you exactly what you have access to. This is an AWS account, and it expired on January 3, 2024, which is when I built this slide. So this was a fresh access token at that time. But that expiry part of it is also really important, because you can find a JWT access token. It could be valid, it could be expired. And if you have no way to collect a new access token, there's still no vulnerability. Move on. And then that last one, what I told you, leaking everything can be a completely valid scenario. This is that Cisco DevNet environment. It defines, well, something with a scroll bar, and this list also goes on and on and on, and you can expand three different levels, so there could be thousands of requests in one of those suites. I really respect them for how they made it still perform, but sometimes it's messy to automate this stuff, so do it by hand is the trick. My next favorite tool that somebody pointed out to me is Grey Hat Warfare. And thanks to some connections I have, I'm using a pro account shared by one of my friends, which is really helpful because then you can do a regular expression search and you can sort and you can bypass the public limit, which is actually really smart by them. For those who do not know what Grey Hat Warfare is, it's basically what FTP search used to be back in the day. You search through a ginormous bunch of files that have been indexed and made searchable, sortable, filterable. And what I like most about Grey Hat Warfare is that their business model is extremely smart. They give a sample of the first 2,000 buckets, and you can fetch the first 2,000 files or something from those 2,000 buckets to get a taste of what's in there. If you have a pro account, you get access to millions of buckets and millions of files, and you can, well, let's say I'm not interested in the files smaller than 300 bytes, because that's usually a template, so I'll add a filter that skips those files. That can make working through data really interesting and performant. Again, on this site, I'm looking for secrets. And secrets can hide in everything, in Excel sheets, CSV files, zip files. People publish complete database backups, their backpack files. You could just start by opening this page and then sorting by file size descending. You'll find complete system images of terabytes. That's an untapped potential that I've not even been going into, but I see Axel has this nice scanning pipeline. really handy feature about Grey Hat Warfare is that after you've done your disclosure and you go back to that same page, you can see if they cleaned it up properly. Because when it cannot, the search engine cannot reach the URL anymore, they do a real quick head scan. They will cross out the links right in real time on this page. And that page might change while you've just discussed with the person that was publishing this data that they fixed it. Or they told you that they fixed it and you still see those links not crossed out here, then you know that they haven't fixed it properly, which happens more than often. Some other tools I use, LinkedIn, basically for doxing a company and finding the person that is responsible, that I need to talk to. Because usually companies that I talk to don't have a bug bounty program. They may not even have a CISO. Hopefully they have a person that's technically responsible. So I'll first try to get a bit of a print of that. I touched on JWT.io. DNS dumpster is just a visualization of what DNS records are on the public domain. Shodan, of course. If you keep an eye out, you can usually get a lifetime account for like $5 every year. Try to pick up on one of those. And then two of the Microsoft tools, login.windows.net and portal.azure.com. Login.windows.net will give you access to a login prompt for any working Office 365 account. If that user can use email, usually they can also just go to login.windows.net and be presented with a web portal. Very handy, because then you can see that this user doesn't just have access to Outlook, but maybe also to SharePoint, maybe also to Word, OneDrive, you name it. Portal.azure.com is basically the same, but it will take you straight to Microsoft's admin environment. So there you can see the Azure Active Directory layout, what computers are assigned, what applications they have running. More than often, I find an admin account that gives you full control over this. I could spin up VMs, I could trash your backups, all that sort of stuff that I'm not doing. A threat actor can and will, just because you try to send an email in your script. And of course, one other important tool that I use is these Gmail canned responses. That's really handy that you don't have to type the same thing over and over. I have a format that works really good, and I try to stick to that. There's also some native tools that I've just got installed, just a terminal with curl. Azure Storage Explorer is a Microsoft product that helps you manage those buckets. You can create new buckets, search through them. I have a pretty big list. I use PHP Storm because I'm a developer by day. And this thing has an awesome database client that can connect to basically any database under the sun on different different variants, older stuff, local files, SQLite, AWS databases. It doesn't matter, it can connect to it and it will download the driver just right for you, install it. You can try to connect. If you can't connect, it will even present you with a message why this IP address has been firewalled. Good. I still know the password, but that's a different story. Old school FileZilla turned into a great client for FTP, SFTP, and all those other different systems. Sometimes you find interesting variants where you need to add an SSL certificate before you can make a connection. I will also try those out, and they sometimes work. And because I'm lazy and not an AWS person, I have a tool called S3 Browser where you can plug in an AWS access key and a token, and it will give you just a directory interface to that bucket. Then the interesting part, probably why you're all here, communicating with companies out of the blue. They have not asked you to perform a pen test on their systems, but you have something quite important to tell them that you discovered. First, who do I reach out to? I never reach out to the developer that's leaking the data, because he could just be covering it up. And then he fixed it, but the company needs to know about this because there was a security incident, which could be major. And also, the developer might work at a software as a service company that will just be a tool that another company uses. So an example, a service for generating invoices is being used by a company that produces things. Here's the leak. The company has nothing to do with it, but because they're producing these invoices, I can see all the invoices that that company produced. That makes it their problem. They don't want that. Other things, do they have a bug bounty program? I always check first, is there a security.txt? Is there a bug bounty program? Usually for my cases, it's not, but when I do, it's either a blessing or a curse because I already found something and that could be specifically excluded in the terms of the bug bounty program that I did not know about up until that point. And it's really frustrating if you try to then put a report into the bug bounty program and it just gets closed. Yeah, no, we already knew that. Cool, then why is it public? I try to not use the info at and the support at mailboxes to disclose this kind of data because it's too important for that. Those things are usually monitored by somebody at reception if you're lucky, but not usually the person with the right IT skills to know what you're talking about. Also, I will not put my responsible disclosure into your shitty web form with three pages and a text area this high that I want to put this many texts in and all my screenshots. Forget it. So then what? Well, low-key doxing. Try to find out who works at the company. Companies these days publish everything about themselves up until the software stack, which is really cool. No idea why you would do that. We use these technologies and that's our e-penis because that defines who we are. But you're also exposing your attack vector. I also try to find the GitHub commit logs, see who wrote the commit. For Postman, there's always an owner, which could be anonymous, but you could also try to Google that again and try to see who added stuff. Sometimes the owner's is in the leaking data itself, CSV files, Excel files with complete order histories and stuff like that. And one of the most fun ones I always find is the Office 365 address book. The scenario I sketched before where you log in with login.windows.net and it will take you to Outlook. That's okay, but very little people do that properly. They lock it down properly, which means that if somebody sent a document to anybody else in your organization, you will land in the SharePoint part of Outlook, which has access to the whole organization graph. Because this person shared multiple documents with this person, so you can click on that and then you get a pop-up. And that pop-up contains, well, the information like this. This person has this contact information and then you have a little drop-down and he shared these files recently. You can click on those files and those files have a little link where they're in the folder. And suddenly from Outlook, you've jumped to SharePoint because they didn't close it down properly and you're browsing through folders of files and you see the internal people that created those files when they created them. Always very fun. And then I try to find a person responsible for security and call them directly or email them directly. Lastly, socials, Insta, Facebook, Twitter, X, WhatsApp directly, Signal. I will try to find you everywhere. So low-key doxing is quite a thing for effectively reporting this. The last option is picking up the phone and calling the front desk of a company, which always sucks because you're not prepared for who you're going to talk to. The skill level of the person you're going to talk to, the level of paranoia the person you're going to talk to. And what you're basically trying to do is something that looks really much like phishing. I'm trying to tell you that your passwords are leaking and I'm looking at all your secret data. It should raise some red flags to the person at the other end. So that's why I hate it. Also, don't say I'm a hacker. Have your story ready, but keep it simple and short.
I found sensitive data belonging to your customers, and I'm looking for the person responsible for managing it. End it at that. Don't let them try to extract this information from you on the phone, which people will try to do. Where did you find it then? And now you're in a situation where you have to spell out a 250-character GitHub URL over the phone. It sucks. You already prepared the email. Get the email address. Send them your report. Also, have an email address that you can spell on the phone. Jelle@divd.nl is an excellent address. Schizoducky@gmail.com, not so much. It can be hilarious, though, to have people on the phone. I don't know if you can read it. Oh, no, our cloud is secure. This can't be us. And then I reach into their cloud and read out a patient number. Oh, okay, mister, we will call you back. Oh, wait. But what if none of that works? What if you find the super admin password for a million solar panels and you're kind of worried about what somebody else could do with that? What if you find hundreds of thousands of sensitive medical records in the US? They're out there. I could get fucked over very much for this, but I want to report it. Sometimes journalists and reporters are super handy, but I'm really happy we have DIVD in the Netherlands. This network of hackers that know people is so valuable. So I like the back channel connections. And if you can't find anybody, let it go. Go on to the next target because you're wasting your time. They don't want to be contacted, apparently. They will find out in the end that they had a problem because somebody else will discover it. I won't sleep a night bad over it if I cannot find you and I tried my best. Then it's your problem. And then the art of being compensated. It's all about how you talk. All my disclosures start the same. Dear company, my name is Jelle Ursem. In my free time, I search the web for companies and organizations leaking sensitive data onto the public web, with the intent of responsibly disclosing these leaks before any bad actor can abuse them, hoping to either collect a nice bug bounty reward or at least a thank you and some good karma. I'm also a member of the DIVD, a Dutch initiative of good guy hackers that together try to make the web a better place. I know the sentence is long. I would like to make it shorter, but I'm not changing anything of this because I've been using this for the past 2.5, 3 years and it works perfect. People understand it. It covers my intentions. It covers that I want to do it responsibly. It covers that I'll take a thank you over any monetary reward, but it also plants the seed of a potential monetary reward. And it tells you that I'm a member of the IVD, which currently has some nice public image in the world. This helps a lot. I've had people within the IVD coming to me saying, how do you do this? How do you get these bounties? Because I've been making disclosures weekly, multiple per week, and I've never gotten anything. Use my template. Next week, he had his first reward. And it doesn't matter what the reward is, you know. It doesn't need to be 10,000 euros like bug bounty programs, but it could be a bottle of rum. It could be a $10 gift card. It could be cake. It could be a holiday. Some recognition would be so nice for somebody that saved your ass. But some guidelines. State your intentions in the first line of the email. That helps. Be kind. Don't be an asshole. You're not some god because you're a hacker and you found a hole somebody or that somebody made a mistake. You discovered it, cool. But when you try to boast about it in your disclosure, like, look, I'm god, that will not make you look good. Give out everything that you have in that first communication. Those screenshots, your contact details, the details of the vulnerability, how to resolve it. Give it all to them at once. Because if you say, well, I have this, and then I want to know who to get to so that we can talk, and then I'll give you this, that sounds way too sketchy. Don't do it. Doesn't help. being radically open removes suspicion. People get my phone number, my home address, my email address, and my private IP address that I use to do my research. My home IP address is a static address, which is helpful for me. Also, because I screenshot everything and I can just tell them, all my research was executed from my home IP address, which is static. Now they can check their logs for my IP address and see everything that I've done. That's really handy because you don't have to keep track of it yourself. And if you do have to keep track of it yourself, that's a lot of work. Include lots of screenshots. Links perish, screenshots don't. I have many disclosures that I have to go just by the screenshots to see what it was about again, because all the things that were behind it have thankfully been cleaned up, as it should. Assume your email will be forwarded to 3, 4, 5, 10 person inside the organization, to the director, to an outside organization that will help the organization figure out this, and that people's schedules will be messed up because of what you're telling them, because they were not prepared for what you're going to tell them. The section with the details, this is an example of how a disclosure for a Grey Hat Warfare disclosure looked. This was fun because I was looking for a free holiday, so I started looking for Weekendje Weg. And I found a CSV file for Weekendje Weg. Not this one, this one. We'll get back to that one. This CSV file was fun. If you make screenshots that resonate with the audience that will be reading your email, that helps. So I was looking for Weekendje Weg and I found this CSV file that had 500 lines. And I found the right website where I could try out if those gift card codes were actually working, and they were. So this 500-line CSV file was worth 50K. Probably the most expensive CSV file I found. They gave me a nice Weekendje Weg. I went to Germany this Christmas. Screenshot the right information can help speed things up. This was a large retailer. I will not read out the files, but I hope you can read it from the back. Some of the data is sensitive. If you put that inside your email, it's embarrassing. It will get people running. Also, it's hilarious. try to include some remediation tips. They're actually always the same. Revoke the credentials. Remove the junk. Perhaps identify where it came from. Notify customers if your local law requires that. Make a notification to your local data protection authority if your local law requires that. And perhaps retrain some of your developers to know how to handle sensitive data. This is not a new subject. We've done this as an industry. There are really good ways to handle this stuff. Some people just need to be trained on how to do it. Adding these will always prevent the next question that will come in from the company. Do you have any tips on how to resolve this? Also, be patient and be kind. This is an example from last December. Dear Hans, this was a message on LinkedIn. Sending people messages on LinkedIn can also be a really good way to get that initial contact going. I have identified this guy as he was responsible for cybersecurity, so I sent him a message on LinkedIn with a free account. You can usually add a message to your invitation. Make sure that within that very short section that somebody will read in the first line of their email, you trigger them, that they will want to click on it, and they will know that this is not some marketing dude that wants to give them a job or whatever. I'm a security researcher. I found a bug. I want to do a responsible disclosure. That should be trigger enough. I don't know the email address. This guy, at least, he searched for me. So I say thank you, and already my apologies for what I just did to you, because your schedule's probably going to be wrecked for the coming weeks. And then 2 weeks later, he responded, yes, my schedule is indeed thrown over. This was right before Christmas. People were shutting down for Christmas holiday. I still don't have the final response for this guy, and we're in February now. That was the last one. Oh yeah, some example rewards that I got that could be diverse. I found some gift card generator for Decathlon. Fun. Here's a gift card for Decathlon. Thank you. I found a backend for a micro drone producer. So my little daughter, when she was 3, she got this whole kit. She can fly her own drones. Of course, the famous Dutch shirts. I have 3 now. Dutch Tax Authority sent me this awesome cup for penetrating one of their developer environments. This one's from NCSC UK. It's a brilliant challenge coin, really heavy. And of course, then sometimes there's bug bounty programs that give you a nice monetary reward. But more often than not, it's just somebody that says, I want to thank you in some way. And then I say, OK, thanks, cool. And it could be a 20 euro gift card. It could be a donation to the IVD. I'm happy with anything. And I'm also just happy if you say thank you. Please just say thank you. That's all I want. There's also some downsides to this, of course. Some turnoffs, and the biggest ones are India and being ghosted. India is actually the same as being ghosted, because you can send something to India and you will never ever get a response, or at least that's my experience. It's all personal experience, of course. Being ghosted also hurts. Being ghosted, when they silently fix the issue, the GitHub repository is gone and they will never ever talk to you, also kind of hurts. But then again, move on, continue. You gave them the information, they secured their topic. Next, there's more to do. Bug bounty programs that say no impact. That's one of my pet peeves. I ranted about this on Twitter. I think that's the next slide, yeah. Coca-Cola. One of the most famous brands in the world. This is a responsible disclosure program without bounties. And there's some private thing behind it, but I think this is ridiculous. If you make so much money, and somebody is coming to tell you that you're leaking data for millions of your customers or for a factory of a Coke plant, I can see the invoices. I'm moving on for this one. Sorry. This just... I think it's disgusting to do this as a multi-billion dollar global company. That's just, give us free money, or free work, actually. A personal rant, sorry. And the last one is this increased sense of the world is held together by scotch tape and everything sucks. That's basically concludes this talk. I see I'm right on time. That's pretty awesome. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Jelle Ursum. Yeah, actually, all time is up, so if you really need to go, you can go now, but there's no lecture after this one, so if you have questions, please stay.
No questions?
Oh, there's a question in the back, yes. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering, how do you keep track of findings that you have? Do you keep a repository, or is it sending out
no.
an email and then it's over?
If I find something, I disclose that right away, because if you build a backlog of stuff, things can happen in the meantime. Things can go wrong. Things can go wrong in your personal life as well. I've been in and out of burnout, which is not fun if you have an open case and then you shut down and you're like, okay, I'll get back to this in 3 months. In 3 months, the original leak had been fixed, but I still had the password for the Azure storage account, which still lead to full compromise. But now I had to tell them, I have had this data for 3 months. I did not get around to giving it to you. You fixed it, but this leak is still out there. You still need to rotate this key. It's embarrassing. I prefer not to do that. So I try to find, report, move on. That also makes sure that you don't have any sensitive data on your hard drive. Keeps in line with the ethics. I can happily bring this laptop because there's no personal data from anybody else on it that I would not want to be have to be found.
Okay, thank you. And I think that's it, because at 4 o'clock the plenary sessions will start in the Da Vinci room. So one final applause for Jelle Ursem.
Thank you.